CliffCentral.com.
His favorite song.
I don't know about favorite.
That's one of them. Come
one
on.
That's up there.
All right. It does sound kind of sleazy in the beginning. So I started singing words to my new Mauritius song.
Your new what?
My new Mauritius song. That's where I'm going to move to.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes.
My goal
yes,
now.
That's right.
I've got a plan.
Yes.
A plan. I'm going to say plan because he says it on.
Okay.
So, Praveen, I'm going to tell you how the economy works.
Your moral compass.
Yeah. I'm going to use my moral compass and go east.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm going to be lying on the beach.
Yes.
And I'll Skype into meetings. And you won't see me for 3 months. And I'll leave Carl with my parents, and he can be fed there while I'm watching women on the beach in bikinis, living in a nice beach house. Da 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 da. Fuck you, Praveen. I'm gonna go to Mauritius. Da 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 da. They only pay 15% tax. Da 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 da.
It's all mapped out.
Yeah, it's gonna be great.
It's funny how fast songs can actually take you, though. Because this song is sort of banned at our house.
Why?
Because in 2000, my uncle got married, and this was like the theme song of their wedding. And this
oh, really?
Song, like their wedding video started, and they played it all the time. Then a couple of years later, they got divorced. So
that's not allowed.
So we kind of aren't allowed to bring this up anymore.
We're going to speak to Justice Malala in a moment from the Burning Platform, brought to you by Nando's. That's coming up next. But before we get to that, here's an email from Mlungisi. Mlungisi says, hey guys, big fan, something from 5FM, something on Cliff Central. Hope this banter. I did listen in during the 702 days. Ben, you are brilliant. It's like a conversation at home with the guys, and that's what I want.
Nice, thanks.
Been placing bets against your outrageous picks, except Tiger, hashtag winning. My buddy, can I taste your... Oh, never mind. I saw you once, and you just walked past. I was so disappointed.
Oh.
But, Lungisi, how was I supposed to know?
No, I think he wanted to say hello to you, but he didn't have the courage.
Oh.
You can be quite intimidating.
I can.
Loving the show. Yeah. I love playing devil's advocate. What is the difference between the lone wolves, these American crazies, and radical Islam, America-wise? Well, I'll tell you what the difference is. More Americans have been killed by those lone wolf local crazies than have by Islamic terrorists. In terms of actual numbers, especially if you take any day since September 11th, 2001 into consideration, it's by a long way. Christian lone wolves have killed more. Mlu. Yeah, so he's exactly right there. Couple other emails. Can I get to these before we get to justice? How much time have we got? We got a couple of minutes. Professor David Block will join us next week. There's some big discovery.
Oh?
Yes, NASA have got a big announcement today.
Oh, yes. Yes.
They're either going to announce that they've discovered life on other planets or that they've discovered other planets. But that'll be good. And then I do love, this is from Tonde Maramba. Says, dear Mr. Cliff, how art thou? I'm fine, thank you. First of all, I support marijuana as a recreational drug. I'm high at the moment, and I'm lying in bed about to masturbate furiously. Mm-hmm. And I do mean furiously. Mm. Then he has some questions for us. Number one, would Sia bang Oprah and forever be straight or remain gay?
Oh, that is an interesting one.
Only chance to meet her.
Mm.
What's it going to be, Sia? You got to choose.
Okay.
You can choose. It's all up to you.
This is my only chance to meet her.
Yes.
You will never have another chance to meet her. She says to you, oh, Sia, look under your chair. It's a condom.
Oh, guys. Ew.
What's it going to be?
Ooh.
He's so awkward when Stedman's giving him tips, though.
Can we just
Stedman in a gimp suit going,
now, come on.
Sia, get on top.
You got to do it.
Okay,
you would
fine.
Do it.
Yeah, I would, yeah.
Oh, Sia, you would bang Oprah. You're
yeah, he would.
So nasty.
Oh, no, he's not. He's clever, because then he would get that money. Are you kidding? That Oprah Winfrey money? That's big money.
But it's the thought of the vagina.
Oh, come on.
Never mind. Sorry.
Would Mabale ever have Jacob Zuma, Trump, and
no.
Putin in her dungeon?
No.
Or change race to be Indian, or change sex to become a man?
I'll become a man. It's fine.
Okay, but you're not. You're very happy being. You're very happy being black.
Yes.
Okay, and you would not take Trump, Putin, or Jay-Z.
No, absolutely not.
But you might become a man.
I'll become a man.
All right. Would Ben take up the Springbok job for life or have Zac Efron finger him in the ass?
Oh.
Springbok job for life. Jeez, talk about easy job.
Okay.
Expectations so low. And I like my ass just to be my ass. My fingers included. Thanks.
Oh.
Tunde also says, I am wiser and happier on most days because of you guys. God bless you all. P.S. Can I taste?
No.
Jane's juice.
Oh! Oh. Right.
You thought you knew what was coming up.
You are nasty on the
juice. La la.
All right.
Can I taste your juice?
Ooh.
All right.
I'd love to hear us Jane's answer to that.
That's a very nice email from Tunde.
Very nice.
Jane's birthday yesterday. Did it get any more festive? Because I left at around 10.
Well, she did carry on singing happy birthday to herself at least 8 times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We have that on video.
Really? Yeah.
Yes.
I think it is on Cliff Central's Instagram page.
8 times.
At least. You know, just anywhere. And anyone who dared to complain was basically anti-Jane.
Uh-oh.
So they got a lashing out from her.
Mm.
You know, the basics around here.
All right, just before we get to justice, hey, Gareth, this is from Michelle. Every month, a large portion of my salary is gone, not because I didn't do a portion of my work, but because the government needs my money. They need it to pay for their Snoop Dogg lifestyles and their large percentage of the population that don't, like me, get up and go to work every day. I know that jobs are scarce and that there are people who can't work because of disabilities, but what I object to is having to contribute to paying for children that women had no right to reproduce. What? I think she means that they had children that she's chosen not to have. There is such a thing as free contraception, and if you can't afford to feed a child, then for God's sake, just don't have one, let alone an entire herd of offspring. Every single woman that collects a child care grant should be given the contraception injection, oh, very controversial, at the collection point. The right to produce, to reproduce as a pile of shit needs to be stopped. I also object to these bloggers. Sorry, not bloggers. Dole bludgers. How did I get bloggers? She's written in such a small font. Michelle, you write in the tiniest font I've ever seen in my life, spending my hard-earned money on cigarettes and booze. People that are on welfare have no right to these things. They should be made to wear a W. Ooh, you see, this is terrible stuff, Michelle, that you're suggesting. Made to wear a W and be allowed to smack the cigarette right out of their mouth. They also need to realize that they work for me, and if I see one sitting around doing nothing, I'm so pleased Michelle's not our president. But you know what, Michelle, I do understand the frustration. Is you go out every day and you work, and if you figure it now, let's say you're earning well, between 3 and 4 months of the year, conservatively, you're working for government.
Mm.
And that was not a job you signed up for. And every time the budget rolls around, we all just sit back and go, okay, whatever you say, we'll take it.
We'll take it, yeah.
And I don't remember ever signing up for this. Did you?
You make it sound like we had a choice.
No.
We didn't.
That's the weird thing. Like, if you go into a business relationship with someone, or you go into marriage with someone, you got a contract. I don't remember government ever saying, here's the contract. Do you agree to the terms and conditions?
Hmm.
And if you don't like it, you can opt out?
What do we get in return? Like the Table Mountain in our background?
Nothing.
When we take pictures?
Nothing. You get that passport that can only get you into 5 or 6 countries without a visa. Anyway, let's get to the important stuff. Yesterday was budget day, and on the line is Justice Malala. It's time for the Burning Platform. It's brought to you by Nando's. Justice, how was the budget for you yesterday? I saw a screenshot you took of 5 of the ministers who did not get up to applaud Praveen.
Yes, that was quite a thing. How are you guys? I've got my juice. I'm ready for a long chat.
Oh,
no. You know I've got my juice here. I've got my juice.
All right, so Justice, why don't we start with poor old Praveen? I mean, everybody's saying they feel sorry for him, but he is the mouth of the pig on the table, right?
Yes, he is. You've got to, you know, everyone's saying they feel sorry for him because they're saying, oh, this is his last budget and so forth and so on. But, you know, he's playing his own game. You know, Gareth, I had an extraordinary television show on Monday when not just him, but his deputy came along. Now, when I take off my host's hat and put on my analysis hat, I sit there and say, my man, you are playing a game here, and the game is that you guys have sent Brian Molefe to destabilize us, to say one of us is going, well, look, we are united, we are a package, and one of us goes, there'll be consequences from the other one. And I think he's not to be as pitied, or people shouldn't think that he's as weak as all that. In fact, my view is that he's managed in the past year to outwit President Zuma, because quite frankly, President Zuma, it's very clear, wants him out of the job, will do a lot to get him out of the job. And those charges last year when Sean Abrams, laid those weird charges against him last October, it was very clear this was a precursor to kicking him out. And it hasn't worked at all, because Pravin has managed to get public sentiment, business sentiment, NGO sentiments, just huge range of civil society behind him. And quite frankly, he's got the president thinking, if I touch this guy, the end will go haywire and all kinds of things will happen. So I think in a way, it's a weak finance minister who delivered this budget, but it's also a powerful one, because his boss, who should be able to say, you know what, I don't think you're delivering, is actually not as powerful as all that. So, interesting way of looking at it. But you started off by asking about those ministers who didn't stand up and give a standing ovation.
Yeah, let's talk about them, because I think that was probably the most, in terms of gossip, the most interesting part of the budget speech.
Yes, look, it wasn't the State of the Nation speech. We have to grab at whatever we can. Whereas with the State of the Nation speech, you had a whole hour of the EFS to talk about. So
who were they? It was Batabile Dlamini. It was Lindiwe Zulu. It was David Mashlobo.
Des van Rooyen.
Des van Rooyen.
Yeah.
And who was the fifth one?
The fifth one she was sitting
behind Des. I can't remember her name.
Yes, towards the left. I didn't pick up her name. Well, but I was interested in those four, because if you look at the trajectory of what's of the debates in the ANC, the first one you'd say is Des van Rooyen, who is openly and outwardly an anti Pravin Gordhan, anti-Cyril Ramaphosa type. He was implicated in the state of capture report for having visited the Sachsenwald residence of the Gupta family more than 12 times in the run-up to his appointment. Hmm. One has to ask yourselves, what was he doing visiting 12 times to one family? And many, many would argue that he was going to take lessons, to take instructions about what projects to pass on to some people after he becomes the finance minister. The other people, David Mashlobo, that's the man who frequents a massage parlor, takes pictures with the owners who are Rhinohorn, or alleged to be Rhinohorn smugglers or involved in the trade. And he doesn't even stop and say, who am I? Who's touching my bum right now? He just lies there and asks, happy finance? No, it doesn't ask about a happy finance. But the key thing is that the Minister of Intelligence does not ask these key questions. And over the past 2-3 years, when he's been the Minister of State Security, this is a man who has essentially been, how shall I say it, a protection force, particularly for the president. He is the man who famously, or his men famously or infamously, set off that jamming machine in parliament so that we couldn't hear or see when the EFF was beaten up and roughed up and thrown out of parliament the first time they did it in 2015. So you can see where this is going, because Batavile Dlamini, her organization, the ANC Women's League, issues a statement virtually every day about how white monopoly capital, and that is code for Pravin Gordhan, is holding back this country and so forth and so forth. Mm-hmm. And these are the same people who coincidentally have found their gender bone by saying that a woman should lead South Africa. The fact that there are many fantastic, amazing, incredible women who should have led South Africa years ago, people like, let's say, Lindiwe Sisulu or someone else. But no, not those ones. We want a woman to lead South Africa, but this one, not the others. Don't give a chance to Baleka Mbete or to Thandi Modise or to any other leader. No, we want this one. So that someone said, interestingly, that that was the Gupta corner of the National Assembly yesterday. And if you think deep and hard, the people who didn't stand are essentially people who are in some way or other have a linkage to a faction of the ANC that is anti-Pravin Gordhan and the Treasury, that is not keen on what Pravin Gordhan and some of the steps he's taken. It would have been interesting to see where Musebenzi Zwane, the Mineral Resources Minister, was sitting at that time, because I suspect he also did not stand up.
Justice, the budget itself, though, there is huge expenditure and not very much income, not enough anyway. They should balance perfectly in a country that really is running well. You should even have a surplus. And at the time that Thabo Mbeki was president, we actually had reduced our debt to something in the 20s, I think. It's now in the 50s.
When Thabo Mbeki was kicked out in 2008, our debt levels were at 20. Our debt to GDP level was at 27%, 27.8%. We've almost doubled to 50.7%. What it means is that for the past 8 years, we have gone out instead of saying I earn 100 rand, so I must spend 100 rand. We've gone out and borrowed and begged and borrowed and begged to the extent that we are in hock. We are in serious financial trouble. We have been borrowing ourselves out of existence, and very soon we'll have to go to a debt counselor called the ratings agencies to say we are in trouble here. What can we do? Because people will say, I can't give you any more money. You are a spendthrift. You can't look after your money. So what it means, basically, is that ministers, many, many people who should be tightening their belts are not tightening them. There's an interesting thing about the question you asked, Gareth, and it's this. Yesterday, as Minister Gordhan stood up and delivered his budget speech, it had emerged in the Sowetan newspaper that Minister Musebenzi Zwane had bought himself a 1.4 million rand Mercedes Benz. His deputy Godfrey Olifant had bought himself a Porsche. This is with your money that you work hard to earn, and that goes to him. Now, it's fine to buy yourself a 1.4 million rand Mercedes. It's fine to buy yourself a Porsche. But when the Minister of Finance says, do not buy a car for a minister for more than 750,000 rand, this is what the Finance Ministry, Treasury, has told every minister. Do not do that. This has been going on for a year already. And the Minister of Mineral Resources goes out and does it anyway. You have to stop and say, hello, who's running the show here? Because this is exactly why we are in financial trouble, why we've overspent on our budgets. It's because when the finance minister says, don't go sleeping in five-star hotels, sleep in a four-star or three-star, no one listens to him. So Museveni Zwane and Godfrey Olifant from the Mineral Resources Ministry have essentially done what government has been doing, ignoring the calls to tighten your belt and be prudent. They've gone yesterday, as we were delivering the budget from President Gordon. They went, I mean, in Museveni Zwane's case, he's basically spent double what he is allowed or supposed to spend. So our budget is in trouble. This was a tough budget for Pravin Gordhan because there is no money, there is no growth, there are no jobs, and essentially there is no money going into government coffers. And so he has to find money somewhere, and that is why he went for Ben and said, everyone who earns more than 1.5 million rand, is going to pay 45%.
But Justice,
so the rich will pay.
What's the thinking here? Because, you know, we were just joking with Anthea. Maybe I'm not joking. Who knows? But if you go to Mauritius, you pay 15%, which is almost like a tip. You really, you know, if you go to a restaurant, you leave 10%. So 15% is just a little more than a tip. And government should only get a tip from ordinary citizens, in my opinion. But, you know, really, really rich people, let's not take 1.5 million a year. Let's imagine there's some really big hitters who are at the 2, 3, 4 million rand a year level. And we know these people. They're CEOs of companies. There only are about 100,000 of them in the country. But they can all afford to relocate to a place like Mauritius and stop paying tax here altogether.
I think that's going to be a big question mark over what Pravin has done. Now, I'm not sure that I'm convinced by his reasoning. Tebisi Jonas's deputy says that, look, we run a progressive tax system. We need to go for the rich before we go for the poor. We couldn't raise VAT without serious political consequences and so forth and so forth. My problem is exactly the problem you raised, that the rich will begin to, a tax revolt is something that we mustn't discount. A tax revolt is when people say, what am I paying for? Now, I have my own personal beef about this. If right now someone walks into the Cliff Central Studios and says, oh, you guys, I'm holding you up, give me your juice, what are you going to do? You're not going to call 10111. You're going to call the private security firm that hangs around the offices. Yeah. At my home, if I'm attacked in my house, I no longer call 10111 because they're going to come after 2 hours because the cars have broken down. So I'll call ADT 24/7, all these other private companies that are running. So what tax, why am I being taxed more when I'm already taxing myself more? Because if for those people who earn 1.5 million, where do their kids go to school? They don't go to a government school because government schools are not as great as they should be.
Well, like I said earlier, and Anthea raised her eyebrows, no doubt, but I said you can't trust Angie to educate your children, so you send them to the most expensive school you can find.
I'm raising my eyebrows as you speak. How dare you impugn Angie Mutsoha's name like that? The key point is exactly that.
And the same for health, and the same for electricity, and the same for e-tolls, and the same for everything else that we don't outright get taxed for, exactly. But we know these are stealth taxes.
And so if you think about Mauritius, for example, it's a good example, or Portugal, for example, or some other jurisdictions, which say to those 1.5 million plus earning South Africans, oh, come here, you only have to spend 50 days in in our place, in our country, and you get citizenship and you face your tax burden here, and it's 15% or 20% and so forth.
Plus, I reckon a Portuguese passport will get you into more countries visa-free, and you don't have to care if Jacob Zuma goes crazy because your money isn't held in that country anymore.
Well, it's held in euro, and suddenly you're in the pound seats because you can go to France, you can go to Belgium, Switzerland, Germany, wherever. So there are all these considerations, and I think that is something that Ivan Gordon is going to have to think very seriously about.
But let's not worry so much about the super rich or even the moderately rich in South Africa, because they are a very small percentage. The average person, I feel like Pravin had an opportunity here. If he's going to get fired anyway, and the president may still fire him, right? There are a lot of people saying that that's a very distinct possibility. Mm. If he was going to get fired anyway, what Kabisi Jonas talks about how the political cost of raising VAT is much too high. Well, if you're going to get fired anyway, isn't this an opportunity for you to make it very difficult for whoever comes in your place? I mean, if you were really a strategist and you were a tactician and you knew you were on your way out, wouldn't you do your best to make the conditions for a tax revolt work in your favor?
Yeah, look, the problem is that you are dealing with the situation for an individual in that ministry and the ANC and its culture and its traditions. You know, you and I might sit on the sidelines and say, Pravin is on this side of the fence, you should do this and da da da. But listen to so many of the ANC leaders who come on the show, who come on and talk to you, and the party always trumps the individual. And Pravin and those who are on the other side of the divide, the one thing you will find is interesting about them is that when the chips are down, the ANC comes first, and they will do anything for the unity of the movement and so forth, and don't go off on their own. So I find that for your KBC Jonas or for your Jackson Tembus, when it comes to saying, I'm going to take individual action, they stop and say, you know what, Jacob Zuma is one of us. So 2 weeks ago at the State of the Nation speech, Jackson Tembu stands up and says, we've had this debate with you EFF people. Jacob Zuma has won several no-confidence votes, motions here. Sit down and listen, don't. So the default is to go back into, we are still one. We might be fighting, but we're still family. And so Pravin leaving a poison chalice for a successor, in my view, was always going to be a bit of a difficulty. And I think that is why this, in a way, this is a negotiated budget, not a full-on Pravin budget or not a full-on Jacob Zuma budget. It's okay, I'm going to step slowly here and step a bit gently there. He was walking on eggshells and he tried to do the best he could. There are many elements to this budget where you can see that he's trying to, one, accommodate what Jacob Zuma said about radical socio-economic transformation. Why is he going on radical socio-economic transformation? Because he wants to say to the outside world, even though we are fighting each other, I agree with him on radical socio-economic transformation. Am I going to do something about it in my budget? No, I'm just going to trot out the same old laws and rules and regulations that we have been thinking about. If you think about it, radical socio-economic transformation is one of the most overrated, high-falutin phrases you have ever heard and will hear this year. But what is the meat on it? There is no flesh to those bones. Mm. And and but everyone will use it. So that's kind of the tightrope he was walking with this budget.
Justice, what about Batabi Lidlamini? She's sitting there, and we've got a massive expenditure on the expenses part as opposed to the income part of the budget. And she's sitting there, and she's looking down her nose at Pravin as if he's a bad guy because he doesn't suit her agenda. But actually, her whole department, which is being run so badly, is fueled by that money which he's trying to balance. Now, she hasn't done her job. She was in Parliament all morning and then had to go and listen to Pravin in the afternoon about these SASSA social development welfare payments, effectively. What's happening over there?
What's happening is a scandal of monumental proportions. I mean, if anyone should be fired, and fired with extreme prejudice, it is this minister. This minister has sat on her hands for years. The Constitutional Court ruled that the contract with Cash Pay Master Services, we've had this discussion on the show before.
Yes.
Cash Pay Master Services distributes the 17 million social grants. So if your kid is getting the 390 rand child grant, if you're looking after kids who may have no parents and so forth, or carers, you get all these grants are distributed by this company. But Thabile Dlamini gets a Constitutional Court ruling saying this contract is unlawful. You need to start working to make sure that this a new dispensation is found. She has done nothing about it. She again and again has not gone to Parliament to explain what exactly is going on. And lo and behold, yesterday she pitches up and says it's all going to be okay. Well, it's not all going to be okay, because on April 1, people will be waiting for their thing. The contract with Cash Pay Master Services will have come to an end on March 31. Her views, no, we'll go to the Constitutional Court and we'll make a proposal. What if the Constitutional Court says, no way, Jose, it's not going to work? Then we've got a problem here. 17 million people lining up outside saying, where's my money? And this could be the recipe for protests, for massive social upheaval. Will she be reprimanded? Will she be fired? Will anything at all happen? I don't think so. Why? Because she is on the winning side of the battle inside the ANC. And so she will not be reprimanded at all. But here, I tell you, in my view, is the real recipe for some serious social unrest. If these social grants are not paid, then you have 17 million people asking, where's my money? Half of them, a quarter of them, or 10% of them, just let's say 5% of them, start saying, I'm going to burn down that government building. What's this government doing not paying me my money? Because we've told people it's their money, they deserve it, they're entitled to it, then it's going to be big problems. It was extraordinary that person is one of the people who didn't stand up and applaud Pravin Gordhan. And you see why. It's basically that, you know, she's untouchable, but this is a scandal, and she shouldn't be in cabinet at all. It's incredible. I think the other issue that hovered over this budget that is like the SASSA issue is the fact that as Pravin Gordhan began reading his budget yesterday, one of the key things that had happened in the day was that the High Court in Pretoria ordered government to revoke its notice to withdraw from the Rome Statute.
Right.
The Rome Statute established the International Criminal Court. Just go back to February 9. One of the things that EFF, and I think it was Julius Malema himself, who stood up in Parliament and said, Jacob Zuma is a constitutional delinquent. it was a lovely phrase that he used. But essentially he's saying, this guy constantly, again and again, is in breach of the Constitution. Now, for those who've forgotten, let us just go back to what happened last year. This government of human rights, of signatory to the Human Rights Charter, to so many others that it's again and again reminds us it adheres to. A man who's accused of killing 300,000 of his own people, Omar al-Bashir of Sudan, came to this country. People said, you have signed up to the Rome Statute, you are a member of the ICC, you therefore have to arrest him and let him go to trial, where he will get a free, fair trial, and he can put his side of the story. What did we do? We didn't do anything about it. The Pretoria High Court, again, ruled that arrest that man, keep him here, and what did South Africa do? We smuggled him onto his plane, and we let him go. This is a man who is accused of killing 300,000 of his own fellow Sudanese. That's what he's accused of. Anyway, then we decide, no, we can't be arresting all these dictators and bloodthirsty murderers who come to our shores. And so we're going to withdraw from the Rome Statute and the ICC, and we're done with them. We want more dictators, more murderers to come to our country. That's what we want. Come on, let's all get together. So because we know it's so terrible, we say, no, we won't go to Parliament. We will just like that. We will do it on our own without going through the proper procedure.
Use executive authority, yeah.
Exactly. Just like all these dictators that we are supposed to be not working with. And so what happens? The DA takes the matter to court, and again, the court says it is not constitutional. It is invalid to do what this government has done. And so next time Julius Malema stands up and says, you're a constitutional delinquent, President Zuma. In fact, doesn't call him president. Constitutional delinquent Zuma. Here is evidence again, because you remember last year the Constitutional Court ruled that Jacob Zuma had failed to uphold the Constitution by not following what Tulima Dansana, the public protector at the time, had instructed him to do. Here again is his government and him as the head, because he was named in the court papers. Here again he's being a constitutional delinquent. How many times, this is what we all have to ask, how many times has our president been a constitutional delinquent? And this is something we have to talk about. The budget and all that, yes, it's good. But if you have the president of the republic constantly, again and again, without fail, being ruled to be, guy, you're overreaching, this is not constitutional. Has the man read the constitution at all? This is the thing we have to ask.
I would say no. Justice, one last thing quickly. This came in from Caitlin. She has a question. Do you have an opinion on Patricia de Lille allegedly being handed an expulsion letter by the DA ahead of this weekend's election? Do you know anything about that?
I've followed the story. I think that's Caitlin's a great thing, and sometimes we don't get to all the stories we need to get to. But I think what's happening in the DA, in the Western Cape has got about 65, nearly 66% of the votes as per the last August 3 local government elections. The DA is growing and growing phenomenally, particularly in the Western Cape, and will grow in other parts, or is set for growth in other parts. Mm-hmm. What's happening to it is that it's becoming a bit like the ANC. When you have a big party that's growing fast with traditions that are changing quickly, you will have all sorts of things happen to it. When the ANC came back from exile in the 1990s, got into power in 1994, a lot of people thought, oh, I'm in this for the money, for example. And so if I am this or that in the ANC, I can become a DG, or I can have access to tenders and so forth and so forth. The accusations that are flowing around the DA now are essentially the sins and the problems of incumbency. And the DA is an incumbent in the Western Cape. And now in some of the big cities in Johannesburg, in the city of Tshwane, Nelson Mandela Bay, and you will see this kind of infighting happening, certainly in Tshwane it's happening, where I understand that there are groupings in the DA that are saying Solim Simanga is not the right man for the job, he needs to go. There's racial tension. Some people in the DA in Tshwane say, what's going on here? They want to get rid of Solim Simanga and put in a white guy and so forth and so forth. The same thing that's happening in with the DA in the Western Cape. So that's the bigger picture. What's happening with her, I made you understand that she is accused of allegedly leaking party documents to the media. And I always say, yes, we need more people like that who are leaking documents to people like me and you, Gareth. But if that is true, that puts a lie to what she said when she resigned as leader of the DA in the province, and she said she wanted to concentrate on her mayorship. I don't know about the letter that's allegedly been handed to her of suspension, but if it is true that she knew about the handing over of these documents and so forth, I suspect that the rules within the DA will be applied and she might find herself out of office. Certainly, it's a leadership battle, and I think a lot of stuff will be thrown around. Some of it true, so I'm not saying that she's not guilty. Some of it untrue, and you might find that this is a setup. But the DA will find itself in these problems over the next 5 years, over the next 10 years. With growth comes all kinds of things. Think about 2009. COPE got 7% of the vote. Mm-hmm. Everyone was saying, wow, these guys are going somewhere. Mbazi Mashilawa and Tera Lekota started fighting each other. And lo and behold, that was the end of the story, because everyone wanted a piece of that IEC money that they got, wanted a piece of the action that they were suddenly getting, and they destroyed themselves. So the DA will have to be very, very careful about how it navigates this, because if it doesn't, it will implode like so many others have. And essentially, it will be destroyed by money and greed and people thinking, I will get a bit more of this. That's what's happening in the DA.
Thank you, Justice. The Burning Platform with Justice Malala today, brought to you by Nando's. Justice will be back next week, Thursday, with even more. It's not as if we ran out of stuff to talk about today. We ran on for a couple of minutes more than we usually do. Here's an interesting point. If slavery is defined as someone else owning 100% of the proceeds of your work, then what would you call 60% of someone else's work?
Slave.
Are you also a slave? I mean, if you're working for someone else and they get to keep a huge portion, let's say more than half of your work.
Well, that does not make you a bitch. Because slave is like, that's hectic. But a bitch is like, it's still pretty hectic, but it's not completely all-consuming.
I don't know what the word is for it. I mean, it's definitely some kind of thrall. Like, you're not free. And someone said to me, when you asked the question earlier about how did you sign up for this, well, every time you vote, you sign up for this. So is the answer not to vote? Because people who don't vote still get taxed. So I don't know what that means. How much is $1.5 million in monthly income? It helps to talk about the numbers the way we all think about our own situations. That's Michael from New Zealand. Well, he's absolutely right. So let's work it out. If you're earning, let's say, $1.5, $1.6 million, all right? Mm-hmm. and you want to know how much you've got in a month, then that's going to be divided by 12. We've got 125,000 rand a month. That's what you've got. 125,000. So if you're earning anything, let's say if you're earning 100,000 rand a month, according to Anthea earlier, you'll end up being penalized almost more, because that's where 10 billion of Pravin's money is coming from, thanks to increases. Not adjusted for inflation. So think about that one. Because if you're at 100,000, you're not really earning that much money in a month. And these are the people at the top of the pyramid. You wonder why we've got a problem? I mean, if those are the rich, if you considered rich for 125,000 rand a month, I don't know that we've got much of an economy to talk about. And obviously we've got a major problem because we've got this Gini coefficient, which means that the people who earn right at the top are earning so much more than the people at the bottom, that the gap is bigger than anywhere else in the world. That's what they tell me. But that's just a number that means nothing to average you and me. And NASA apparently made that announcement last night. Well, one of the announcements. There's another one coming. They discovered 7 new Earth-like planets that could harbor life. Mm-hmm. The next big question is whether they actually did or not, those planets, in terms of whether they actually might have had life on them or not. A cure for a bad day. I listened to the podcast at half speed. Absolutely hilarious. Gareth sounds like a meth head.
Who is that?
Don't know, but I must try that. That's very good. Great. The first part of the podcast is up. Awesome. Nate, people like that when we're quick on the podcasts. Hey, we try to do it as fast as possible. Some days the technology works with us. Some days it works against us. And a couple other messages we'll get to just now. First of all, Mubs' next song choice.
So you will notice that I have thrown us into a time capsule here. We're doing a throwback to the 80s. Some of the youngins might not appreciate it, but I don't care.
Why was it the best decade ever?
I was born in the 80s. The 80s. But I've also gone for big songs. So all the songs that I chose today, number one songs. Number one on, like, number one in the world.
Listen to this piece of cheese.
Okay.
Are you ready for some serious cheese?
Yes!
Yo! Yeah, yeah!
What do you think, everybody? Oh, people love it, man. People love it. Whitney Houston. CliffCentral.com.